Following podcast contains mature language and spoilers. Listener discretion is advised.
We work the cases that S.H.I.E.L.D. hasn't classified.
The strange, the unknown. It's not just spy versus spy anymore. The whole world's in on the action. Don't touch Lola.
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Welcome to the Marvel Superheroes Podcast. I'm your moderator, Diabolu Frank, and with me are...
Mr. Fix-It.
Paquita.
And this week we're going to talk about Season 1 of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Paquita and I watched the show when it first came out. You were quite fond of Agent Coulson, as I recall.
I was fond of Agent Coulson during the movies, the Marvel movies, but the first episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they kind of overdo the cuteness of Agent Coulson. It's like too much quantities is kind of annoying, actually.
Fix-It, did you watch the show when it first came out?
Nope, just watched it right now.
Just because it hit Netflix?
Yep.
Now, why didn't you try to watch it while it was on network TV?
Don't have TV. Don't have cable. Don't have regular TV.
You have regular television.
I don't have regular television. We don't have the converter box.
Oh, so what do you watch?
Netflix.
You just watch Netflix?
Yeah.
And you don't watch even regular TV?
No, I haven't watched a regular TV. I couldn't tell you what's on TV right now if you asked. I mean, we get like, you know, for sporting events, but I think I get like two channels because our box is not a very good box. And
no, your TV doesn't get an HD signal?
No.
Huh. I did not realize that was the case.
Nope. I mean, we probably could if we invested in it, but I mean, we're fine with just Netflix and Amazon Prime and Hulu.
What was the show something you were interested in when it first came out, though?
I was interested in it. I wanted to watch it. I mean, I'd watched all the Marvel movies up to now, and I knew they were going to be integrated somehow.
How did you feel about Agent Coulson from the movies?
I liked it. I mean, as you watch the show, you get those one characters.
Well, as you watch the show or as you watch the movies?
Well, the movies. Well, you watch the movies, Coulson was always kind of like goof, kind of a comedic relief type character. He's kind of goofy, but he's straight-laced.
I mean, deadpan is what I would say.
Oh, deadpan, there you go. Yeah. I'm thinking of more of from like the Iron Man movies, even Thor. So I knew of him. I thought
he was pretty straight in Thor. I don't really remember him bringing much comedy to Thor. Well, it was the Iron Man movies that he tended to be more jokey.
No, even the Iron Man movie or the Thor.
Hmm.
Even the Thor movie, because they're talking about whenever the doctor goes to pick up Thor and they're going to, before they go to the bar, he kind of plays it up a little bit. But like I said, I mean, I don't know. I thought Cosmo was a funny character. I mean, I didn't.
Did it affect you much when he met his end in Avengers?
Well, yeah. I think that was a smart play by Marvel, because you had the buildup of his character and then you kill him. He's not a main character, but he's someone you know type of character. So it was kind of like, oh, you know, they killed Coulson. He was a cool character. They used him as a catalyst to start up the Avengers to come together and go battle. And so when the show came out and they said they were bringing him in, I was a little confused because I was like, I'm pretty sure he died. I mean, I don't remember there being a last second, you know, quick, you know, jumpstart his heart type moment. And so when I started watching the series, I was kind of curious on how they were going to explain that. And I mean, it had a pretty cool explanation.
Well,
I mean,
we'll get to that. Though,
if you watch the first few episodes, it's kind of slow pace wise, even character development wise, it's just kind of slow. But man, once that ball started rolling, it was actually quite enjoyable. Like, I watched literally the whole season today.
Mm-hmm. Wait, today?
Yeah, I started watching it last night around 10,
mm-hmm.
watched it till about 4, fell asleep because I'm on vacation. So I woke up around 12 ish and watched it all the way up until here. And then you decided not to let me finish the last episode because you told me, well, don't watch everything. So I stopped literally the episode till the end, just so you know, I guess we could watch and talk about it.
Now, Paquita, was Coulson one of your favorite Marvel movie characters?
Of course. He was my second favorite character besides Iron Man.
And you enjoyed him in the Marvel mini movie he appeared in as well, right?
Yes, I did.
And that was the one. Did you ever see the mini movie that they did?
Which one?
The one where it's him driving from Iron Man 2 into Thor.
Yeah, it was good.
Give him a chance to actually be the action hero for a change.
Yeah, no, I did catch that one where you get stopped at a robbery at a convenience store?
Right.
Yeah, that was a good one.
He's in there for a pastry of some kind, right? Like a Twinkie or something?
Something
Ding
like
dongs,
that.
Ho-hos, something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah. So, Coulson, he was your second favorite character up through Avengers. So, you were hoping that he was going to come back?
Well, I mean, come back.
Were you comfortable that he had? Well, hold on. Were you comfortable when he died? Were you comfortable with him staying dead, or did you want them to contrive a way for them to bring him back after he was killed in Avengers?
Well, I would prefer if they bring it back, but in the movies. Mm-hmm. And it's like I said, I mean, I love Coulson. He was one of my favorite characters. But in the show, the few episodes that I watched as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's not him. It's not him because it's too, tried to be too goofy, I guess. And he's more subtle. Kind of the type of comedy he gives into the movies is more like quiet, but kind of one of those shy guys that you see as like, oh, so cute. But I don't see that in the movie. So yeah, I was hoping that they will bring him back, but as an action movie, like explain more into detail and not as a TV show.
Fix it. I was one of those guys who bought into the theory that he might come back as the Vision, that they might use him as the basis for creating the Vision for the Avengers.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear that theory?
Actually, I think I heard it from you.
Okay. So sort of like how he ended up in the Iraq War then.
Yeah. Pretty much. But I remember you bringing it up one time to me that, and I even thought he would be kind of a cool Vision.
He's got a good face for it, I think. But he made a point of saying that he was not going to be the Vision. He poo-pooed that pretty quickly, that theory.
Well, but it wouldn't have made sense either on the show because I put him really expensive CG-wise.
No. He would have been the Vision in the movies.
Oh, in the movie. Oh.
Yeah, because this was before the show, if I recall correctly, this show wasn't announced until well after the Avengers had already come and been a big hit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that the money the Avengers made helped to inspire ABC to make a TV series.
Well, like I said, to me, if anything, it keeps the franchises of the movies alive, like between movies.
Mm-hmm.
By watching the show, I am now planning to go back and rewatch Captain America 2 as well as the sequel to Thor.
For years, the truth was hidden. People from other times, other worlds, heroes. But now we know. They're among us.
What does S.H.I.E.L.D. stand for, Agent Ward?
Strategic Homeland Intervention, Enforcement, and Logistics Division.
And what does that mean to you?
It means someone really wanted our initials to spell out S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm clearance level 6. I know that Agent Coulson was killed in action before the battle in New York.
Welcome to level 7.
You're in danger.
What do you mean, danger?
S.H.I.E.L.D.
I should carry a S.H.I.E.L.D.?
S.H.I.E.L.D. Government. Scary men in dark suits who come after guys like you.
Is that who I think it is?
She's just the pilot.
Melinda May is just the pilot. Fitzsimmons.
Fitz.
Simmons. I'm engineering. She's biochem.
It's not of this earth. We will rise against those who shield us from the truth. And nothing can stop us in the... Hey!
There are two ways we can do this.
Oh, it's one of them the easy way.
No.
No. We're not exactly a team player.
We're not exactly a team, but we're in a position to do some good.
I've seen giants. The good ones are not heroes because of what they have. It's what they do with it.
We're not the only ones interested in people with powers.
Only take the shot if you have to.
We have a couple of hours at most. There's no way that we could possibly...
Don't ever tell me there's no way.
Pilot episodes where they're bringing the team together. And so Coulson is just alive without any explanation. And I've forgotten that Colby Smulders was in this first episode. I'd forgotten that the doctor was in this episode, the one that we're looking at right now.
The special help.
So it's kind of nice because having watched the show as it came out and not having revisited the show before, I wasn't aware that they had Easter eggs for the series in this episode that wouldn't pay off until later on. Mm. That I'd forgotten were even in these episodes. Paquita, how many do you recall? Did you make it past the pilot on this show?
Did watch the pilot. I lost interest halfway the pilot.
Did you watch any episodes after the pilot?
Not really. I probably watched 5 minutes of a couple of them, but none of them actually helped my interest.
For me, the reason why I liked Coulson in the movies is he was our point of view character. While all the other Marvel heroes, they're scientists and stuff, he was an agent, which got him into the room, but he also was kind of a fan, especially in Avengers, where they showed he was really into Captain America. But I also liked how he looks like an accountant in the first Iron Man movie, and then it turns out he's got all this cool S.H.I.E.L.D. equipment and he's able to help that movie progress.
I never see him was an accounting type.
Well, he didn't look like anything special in the first Iron Man movie up until he helps Pepper Potts.
Exactly. He looks like a very geeky person that he just like total shyness that he doesn't develop his full potential in front of people, but he actually have very cool tricks under his sleeve.
Yeah, it's nice because he's an everyman relative to the other Avengers heroes, but he's very competent too. So it's not like he's played for comic relief, but he can bring comic relief to the table. He can bring the everyman perspective. He can be a straight man as he was more so in Thor, where he basically replaced Nick Fury. You know, he was the main straight man who was playing off of Thor in the first Thor movie. So I liked his versatility, and I liked that he was the connective tissue between all these other movies, even I think more so even than Nick Fury.
Well, yeah, that part was fantastic. And when you talk about, okay, so his type of jokes are very, they're not really jokes, but
they're more observational, like
more
flat.
That because, you know, he's kind of like an odd character. He's not like one of those popular kids. He's not a Nick Fury guy type of, you know, I'm a badass. He's more like a shy, you know, awkward character. It's like when
he'll also tase you and watch Super Nanny if you get in his way.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those people that, you know, just don't mess with me and we'll be okay. And then I'm just this awkward character, like the one he said that he was watching Captain America sleep. I mean, that was a very funny line, but I mean, if you really think about it, you have no idea how many times I'm at work and I say something weird but I didn't mean to, but it's like that type of humor is very good. And that's what I don't like about the show, that he thinks, well, that's gonna happen in the latest Marvel movies, that they think they can make a joke every 2 or 3 minutes, like I mentioned before. And that's what they're trying to do on this one here. Coulson is not a funny guy per se. It says he's just, his type of humor is more of the awkwardness of his personality. So he's not like, oh, I'm gonna make a joke, like, you know, Mac, that he's always a very funny character, or Fix It, you know, that, or you, that makes a lot of jokes and stuff like that. He is not like that.
I would say that I'm the least funny one, because when I'm funny, it's when I'm being straight and I'm just saying something matter-of-factly.
Or just something weird that actually don't expect you to say, and they're like, what the? And that's what it comes in that type of his character. I kind of see you as a Mr. Coulson.
I'll take that awkward, weird,
nerd, just weird guy.
I'm
not cute.
Okay, what did you think about the pilot episode, Vix? I mean, were you emboldened to continue with it based on the quality of the pilot alone?
No. It's definitely one of those shows you have to binge watch, because if you try to watch it weekly, it just doesn't, at least in the beginning, doesn't have that hook to grab you and hold on to you. If I had watched this weekly, I don't think I would have stuck to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I watched it weekly, and I watched it weekly because it was like something I felt obligated to watch.
Okay.
It wasn't something I was enthusiastic about.
There was no pleasure.
Not really. I really hated the characters on this show in the early episode. Did you like any of the new characters that they introduced in the pilot?
No.
Yeah, because Ward is just the flat, stiff, generic, white, super competent agent, and that's all he brings to it. Fitzsimmons, I thought, were just terribly annoying. The whole finishing each other's sentences, and I don't know, maybe the whole being British thing, just like too much, too much of the
Harry Potter.
Yeah, just like something out of Mary Poppins or something. It's like, I don't know, just that back and forth was not doing it for me. I like May okay, I guess. You know, I mean, she's another character who's kind of flat because she's the stoic badass who doesn't talk very much.
But see, I think that was the whole point of the show, was when it starts, it's
they're kind of generic.
Yeah. And then as the show progresses, you start getting to know why they are, where they are. Then that's when you, especially with Ward, then you're like, wow, now that's,
well, kinda... don't jump ahead too far. How about Sky in the pilot? To me, Sky is like,
dirty girl.
She's the worst character out of all the characters. I hated her.
She was really whiny.
Instantly and intensely, because she seemed the most fake, because she's obviously model pretty, hot, very skilled with makeup, great hair, and yet they try to sell her as being a nerdy outsider who lives in she's a hacker and she works with a terrorist organization and she lives in her van and she's trying to investigate superhumans and get to the superhumans before S.H.I.E.L.D., the boy she perceives as nefarious agency, is going to get to them. She was the most obviously artificial, phony-ass character. I hated her. She was the fake geek girl. Okay. So, yeah. So, which character did you find the most loathsome?
I would have to agree with you on Skye. She just was not very appeasing. Mm-hmm.
And you know the actress was, I think she was a Hong Kong pop singer.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I believe she's American, but she's part Chinese. And if I recall correctly, in that area, she had some minor hits. You can actually watch music videos with her in them from her past singing career. Keith, which character did you hate the most?
I didn't actually watch the episode too closely to kind of create a judgment on it. So I will say none on the first episode. Nobody.
You didn't particularly hate anybody is what you're saying.
Well, they're a bunch of annoying people. And once again, their personalities and their type of sense of humor and just their expressions, they're really, really annoying me. So that's one of the main reasons why I didn't like the show. It wasn't because of the story. It's not the story, because if it was the story, I would probably give it a couple more episodes, at least five or more episodes. But it just, I cannot pass the actors, if you can call that actors.
I think the acting was pretty bad in these early episodes. Would you agree, Fixit?
It's a TV show, dude. I mean, it's not like you're bringing...
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's a TV show. I mean, you at least have to try to, Coulson, you know, kind of...
Coulson played Coulson fine. Everyone else was your generic characters. So it's not like I expected to be blown away by the acting.
But it wasn't like AMC or FX. This was very much ABC television Tuesday night lineup, yeah, kind of bullshit acting.
No, absolutely. But then again, like I said, it's all, I think this, the thing, the great thing about the show is that was the setup so that you'd get the what a twist at the end.
Well, okay. Sticking with just the pilot though, what did you think about the whole Mike Pearson thing? There was a time where people were thinking he might end up being Luke Cage, and I guess they were disappointed when that didn't work out. How did you feel about Mike Pearson and his son? Mike Pearson is a superhuman who has a metal centipede looking thing on his arm that gives him strength and agility beyond a normal man, and he's trying to raise his son while being unemployed, and he ends up turning out that he's working for people who are perhaps not having the best interests of society at heart.
But see, that's the thing though, if you're just going to talk about the first episode, then this is going to be a very boring podcast, because it's not,
we're not going to talk very much long. I just want to set the stage basically.
It's not a strong episode, not a strong first episode. If anything, it's just kind of a little quick shoe in into the Marvel universe on the TV scale, because we've had already so many movies coming out that it's just easy to say, okay, look, now we have a TV show that's going to link our movies. Like I said, the pilot was really weak. I mean, I think I actually did
see it. It seemed really cheap too, didn't it?
I think I did see this one on TV and I was very underwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt no desire to keep going. It's one of those where, thank God for Netflix, because after what happens in the Marvel Universe affects it, it's actually, like I said, it's a nice little foothold that tides you over between movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could be tied over between movies because as the show is going along, they hint at a movie. So like I said, I'm going to go back and I'm actually going to rewatch these movies just because it's a stupid show. And of course, I don't think it had a stinger either.
I think I believe on Netflix, they're moving the stinger before the credits because nobody wants to sit through the credits and nobody wants to fast forward through Netflix because it doesn't work very well. Searching on Netflix has never been a good time.
The girl's not qualified to be a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
Agreed. That's why I've invited her on as a consultant. S.H.I.E.L.D. does it all the time. Technically, Stark's a consultant.
And technically, Skye's a member of the Rising Tide. She hacked our RSA implementation.
Twice. From a laptop. Imagine what she'll do with our resources.
We have two kids on this bus who aren't cleared for combat. You're adding a third.
At least Fitzsimmons are trained S.H.I.E.L.D. scientists. But Skye? You said this was a select team, assembled to work new cases, to protect people. I don't see how letting some hackers hang along.
Looking for an objection I haven't already anticipated. I'm calling this. But your frown will be on record.
We've been called in to investigate in 084. We all know what that means.
Yes, we do. It means we don't know what that means.
always.
So 084, this is the one where they go to some generic South American country to get like an alien artifact or something.
That turns out it was made by Hydra.
Okay. Now the Latina soldier, was she somebody? I thought she was going to be somebody from the comics.
Nope.
No, so she's nobody.
Nope.
She was hot. So this was one of those super duper disposable episodes because you didn't need to see any of this shit. The only thing I think they did with this episode is didn't they establish in this one that when they get artifacts that are too dangerous, they just shoot them into the sun?
Place, yeah.
So, but didn't it turn out they were lying though?
Yeah. Well, see, now you're jumping ahead. There's so many layers of lying that after a while, I almost started seeing S.H.I.E.L.D. like a villain. Like I was like, they're really not that
actually, that was one of the things I found refreshing about the show to start with is there were in the time of Camelot, in the time of Kennedy, government was seen as beneficial. From Roosevelt to Kennedy, especially, it's like you need the government, you want big government, you want the FBI and the CIA. These were sterling members of society. These were the best of the best who were protecting us and protecting the entire world, and people believed in government. And then you have Watergate and you had Nixon, and you have this just incredible distrust in government. And also, even before that, with Lyndon Johnson, there were so many people that were against the Vietnam War. There were so many people who were against civil rights. And so all of a sudden, government was this intrusive element, and we've never been able to recapture the naivete of those years from Roosevelt to Kennedy when we believed in the CIA, for instance, where they weren't scary motherfuckers. They were actually our hero. And I like that S.H.I.E.L.D. seemed to be trying to get to that place again where, no, we are the benevolent agency. Yeah, we have all these secrets, and we handle all this heavy-duty sci-fi stuff, but you can trust us. And that's what made it such a great twist, but at the same time, it was sort of sad because where it was novel that they were giving us positive views of government agencies, and now it's like, no, we're still a bunch of shits. So it kind of reinforces a lot of the narrative that we have in politics these days, really, where, you know, they're all bad guys. And why even try? Everything's corrupt. Everything's ruinous.
Guys like Coulson that are like, they're just good guys trying to do the best with where they're at. And you have all these corruption around.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that, you know, they're like, oh, we send this here. We send it to the, what's it called? The fridge. Mm-hmm. Or we send it to the sandbox. So we send it, you know.
And if it's too dangerous to keep on Earth, we just destroy it. Otherwise, we put it away until we can figure out how to use it.
Take it to the link shop. Yeah. And then it turned out, they keep all this shit hidden because, like the guy said, you really think Fury's going to give up all these toys? Like, and it's cool because it's true. Fury has to be badder than the bad guys to keep them in line. So it was kind of cool. I love the fact that when they do the whole freezer break, to me, that reminded me much of the comics when they do the break from the raft.
Mm-hmm.
So you have all the supervillains released into the city.
Okay, well, you're kind of getting ahead, though. Let's hold rear it back for just a little bit.
Their most bizarre case yet.
And the attackers?
Invisible. Cool.
Is her first mission ever.
You're going in with no self-defense skills?
I have a few tricks up my sleeve.
I am trying to protect you.
But nothing can prepare them for this.
We have to live with the choices we make.
Killing innocent people.
Now, the third episode is The Asset. And this was one of the ones that I was definitely struggling through because it was a Sky-specific episode where she, as a young agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., or not really, sort of a pseudo-agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., she has to infiltrate the private island base of some megalomaniacal tech guru.
Bond
villain. And they're trying to get this material that's been created by a scientist that's been captured, yeah. And it sets up Graviton, the old Avengers villain.
That was him, right?
The minor league Magneto ripoff.
I knew that had to be Graviton. I remember seeing it when I saw the hand reach. I was like, is that?
Well, see, that's one of the things. This episode was one of the first times when people got excited again after saving the pilot and being disappointed, because this was like the first time that they brought in something that was definitely part of the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
I think it was a big disappointment when they had Mike Peterson with his weird centipede thing, because that's not something from the comics at all. And then the second episode was some random sci-fi thingy that had nothing to do with the comics at all. And then the third episode is like, it shows how desperate comic fans were, where it's like, oh my God, they're setting up Graviton. Like, anybody really gives a shit. It's like, wow, that's some D-list shit right there. And this is what you're putting on TV. We're going to have the D-listers on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So it was like kind of excited about that. At the same time, you're kind of miffed because it's like, why am I wasting my time on something like this? This is fucking Nightman Mantis level shit going on over here.
A rogue agent with extraordinary powers.
We have to bring her in.
We have to take her out.
Determined to destroy the team, even though he trained her.
She's not being watched. She's being controlled.
He can't contain her.
I kill you, or they kill me. You're a robot. Can you do that?
Okay, so the fourth episode is I Spy. This is the one with the black girl who's got a camera in her eye, and she's basically being, she doesn't want to be a villainess, but she's being manipulated to where she has to assassinate people. Now this, I seem to recall liking this episode.
Oh, that's a dark episode.
Yeah, I like that darkness, and I liked that you could see how malevolent this organization that S.H.I.E.L.D. was trying to deal with was. Did they have a name for this group? Were they just called Centipede or what?
Yeah, they kept calling them, Cybertech or whatever.
Okay, so Cybertech was behind the Centipede device.
Yeah.
Okay, so like I said, I haven't watched these shows in a year, so I did like this. I just was bothered because Centipede wasn't Hydra. And when you're watching a show called S.H.I.E.L.D., you want S.H.I.E.L.D. to fight Hydra.
Hell, Hydra.
And we didn't understand why there wasn't any Hydra yet. And Centipede, it felt kind of like how the Bond movies, when they didn't have the rights to Smursh or Spectre because that was tied up into copyright issues, that they had to go with Quantum. And then we ended up with Quantum of Solace, the movie that nobody particularly seems to like out of the Bond series. It's like Bond seems to come back with Casino Royale and then follows up with Quantum of Solace, and nobody seemed to like that movie.
Yeah, I thought it was good.
I liked it all right, too. I thought that people were kind of hard on it, but it definitely had more of a Roger Moore feel to it than a classic Connery feel. The other thing, too, is why do you get Olga Kuryenko to play a Latina? That didn't make a lot of sense to me, especially with that gross tan they gave her.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's the scene where she puts on her glasses to look at it.
Wait, what happens here? I haven't seen this. This is a stinger?
Yeah.
So what is she doing?
Those glasses have like x-ray vision. He's trying to cheat cards, and she tells him, you know, when I put this on, I can see through your clothes. And he goes, uh-oh, and he gives up. He walks off because he doesn't want to be seen naked because British. And he's there, and she's on the other side of the wall, and she puts him on. Oh my.
That's cute. I didn't remember that one. But again, that's the kind of thing they were doing back then, since they didn't have anything interesting happening. They had to just go with something cute because they didn't have like a really intense stinger where you're like, oh my God, what's happening here? It's more like just a jokey kind of thing.
Yeah,
they all seem kind of like that. It's like Nick Fury shows up for one.
Actually, not till about the middle do they start kind of hinting at stuff, future episodes.
Yeah, that was one of my big problems with the show at this point is that it was so episodic. It didn't feel like it was building toward anything significant. It just felt like biding time, treading water. Like they were just going to keep throwing these agents at random bullshit every week and mostly not even comic related stuff.
Well, see, and I initially thought it was going to be more along the lines where they were going to be tracking out villains, which would make for a very short season, but still, it'd be interesting.
Well, it's kind of like Coal Shack. They just create like the monster of the week for them to deal with.
Yeah.
You have a gift. Why not show the world?
Creating a hero.
One dose and you'll feel incredible.
Means playing with fire.
Well, let's see what you can do.
And one of their own.
Since the moment you stepped foot on this plane, you've been lying.
You'll be branded a traitor.
I'm done with you.
So the girl with the flower dress, this is the one where they have the Asian guy who has the fire powers. He was Scorch, okay. Because at first I thought maybe they were going to try to do a Sunspot thing, and then apparently Sunspot was too big league for them at this point.
His name is Scorch.
Now, this was the first episode with the girl with the flower dress, right? The first rain episode?
No, she's on the first in the pilot, remember? Because doesn't she pop up with Michael?
I'm not sure that she, because I remembered the scientist that helped to give Mike Peterson his powers was in that one. I didn't remember if Raina was in that episode. And you don't like Raina, is that correct?
No, I mean, she's just kind of a creepy character, but now I think she's gonna be, again, like, jumping up ahead. I think she'll be like an alien or some shit.
Okay.
Free warrior. If they really want to blow my mind, Skrull.
Well, I'm not sure if they have
green thing with a fucking Popeye the Sailor Man chin with stretchy arms, and I'll be like, holy shit, mind blown.
Well, does Marvel have the rights to the Skrulls, though? I thought that maybe Fox had the rights since they were in those earliest Fantastic Four episodes. Now, I do like Sky a little bit better when she's just got her underwear on. I like too that she's the computer hacker who has hot computer hacker sex with another hot computer hacker guy, because that's how life works.
See.
But at least she looks good in her underwear.
Yeah.
That was actually the first time I started.
Surprise, Disney let that slide.
Yeah. Well, it's just like in the episode The Asset where she's trying to deal with the who gives a shit. I'll just edit that out.
Yeah. This one they also Scorch actually kills somebody.
Yeah. I liked that they allowed him to be full on supervillain. This was the first full on one that they tried to do. But I liked Raina. I liked how weird she was.
I'm telling you, dude, if she turns out to be, because we already know there's Kree. If they let there be a Skrull, oh my God. She's a Skrull, that's awesome.
I'm really not confident that Marvel Studios has the rights to the Skrulls. I kind of think that maybe that's owned by Fox.
Because
it's one thing when it's like Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch.
Wouldn't Ronan have been owned by Fox?
Well, see, that's the thing, is the Kree weren't introduced until 1967. They were introduced in Fantastic Four 57 or some shit like that. So I don't think that they have the rights to everything ever done with the Fantastic Four.
I don't see how they could have.
But the Skrull were there. Their first appearance was in the Fantastic Four. They were there in the second issue of the book. So, and the fact that Skrulls have not been mentioned in anything related to Marvel Studios, that they had the Chitauri, who were the ultimate variation on the Skrulls.
Skrulls, it's like they have to use them eventually, because that's such a cool character. You have a morphing hive mind civilization that you can, you know, they can mimic other powers.
I'm not disputing that. I think the Skrulls are cool. I just don't think they're necessarily available to Marvel Studios, though.
I wouldn't be shocked if Marvel's kind of...
It's just like we know, but we know that they, like Silver Surfer and Galactus, Fox has them locked up. They can't use those at Marvel Studios at all. And I suspect, given that being the case, that maybe Fox has the rights to all the characters from 1 through 50 that don't have other obligations. Like, for instance, Namor was in an early issue of Fantastic Four, but he predated the Fantastic Four, and he was optioned to Universal for a number of years. So that would be an instance where, no, they wouldn't be able to use him. And obviously, the Inhumans were introduced prior to that point as well, or at least individual Inhumans had been. Like, Medusa was already around by that point. But the Inhumans themselves as a group and as a fully formed concept doesn't happen until after Fantastic Four 50.
I don't think they own the Skrulls. I think, like I said, and jumping ahead again here, where she's talking about how the monsters were tearing through this village to find the baby. Skrulls, perfect monsters. Like, I mean, I can't think of any alien races that can look human and at the same time be monsters.
Okay, well, we'll get to that.
Yeah, because you got Kree. I mean, fuck, Marva has so many.
There's a lot of aliens they can use, though.
But none of them are shape-changed, except for the Skrulls.
Two victims, found in the same weird way.
We're looking for a killer.
That humming noise, you hear that? Whatever you're doing, make it stop.
I can't protect you guys from stuff I can't even see.
S.H.I.E.L.D. has no record of anything like it. No one does.
You don't have to be afraid.
The next episode is FZZT. This was the most obvious filler. We want to be the X-Files kind of episode.
Nah, this was all filler, dude. All filler, no killer on this one, dude.
So what you've got is the firefighters, right?
Yeah.
That after the Battle of New York, as they like keep calling it, because they're not the Avengers in the public record, they're the heroes of New York. And these firefighters got a hold of some Chitauri technology, and it caused one of them to accidentally kill a bunch of other ones, right?
No. What happens is there's like a rust type thing on the helmet. So the firemen are cleaning it. It turns out it's some kind of bacteria. It's some kind of a bacteria that's passed on through electric shock. And first you get some kind of weird magneticness around you, and then you basically just blow up like a battery and die. And of course, one of the heroes gets infected. Yeah, that's where the fireman's infected right there. One of the heroes gets infected. It's basically a space virus.
It's very fillery episode. This was one of the ones that almost broke me. With this episode, it's like, is this not going to go anywhere. This show is never going to go anywhere, is it, at this point while I was watching them?
Okay. Hark to a past episode. Space rabies.
Yeah, that's something right, like that.
Space rabies.
One bite and it's a painful death. Yep.
There's Howard the Duck reference right there. Yeah. It really is space rabies. Think about it.
It's the MacGuffin. Except instead of chasing the MacGuffin has infected you.
So.
Now, the one thing I did like was Simmons is put into a position where she has to make a choice that makes you wonder if maybe the show is going to have some balls, and then they proceed to clarify, no, at this point the show has no balls whatsoever.
What do you mean, dude? She jumped off a fucking plane.
And then, well, I mean, because I'm trying not to spoil episodes, but in this particular instance, I don't care very much. She gets saved anyway.
Because we warn you of all our spoilers.
Yeah. Well, you're not getting spoiled by not having to watch the episode. I was talking shit about this one, but I did like how they went through the motions, and they really made you wonder if Simmons could potentially die. And it's a pretty cool moment when she jumps out of the bus, which is the what they call their plane, which I don't understand. Why do you call the plane the bus?
Because it has that one great joke. Short bus? This is short. What is it? Short bus to big bus. Short bus to bus.
Okay. And he's not like, that great of a joke.
And he literally goes, I will never let you name these teammates again. And then I thought it was a fun joke. They have those little moments where it's kind of like that off-color humor type joke. So.
And ultimately, everything is reset to exactly where it was at the beginning of the episode, which is the worst type of show, I think.
You've experienced level 7. Now.
I'm afraid this mission's classified. Clearance level 8.
A covert operation.
This is gonna take a while.
With one way in.
What if they're being tortured right now?
Trust the system.
But no way out.
The system sent one of its in there to die.
Let's hope they're as good as you think they are.
So episode 7 is the hub. This one helped to pick the show up for me a little bit because I liked that they were finally going to S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters, that they were showing kind of the weird bureaucracy that you've got with S.H.I.E.L.D. I just like that you finally got a little bit into the S.H.I.E.L.D. lore, because the show up to this point was feeling very much like it was just any show. There was nothing about it that was very distinctive to S.H.I.E.L.D. aside from the fact that they're occasionally vaguely referencing Marvel shit.
True. I know, I agree with you very much on that. It didn't feel very Marvel. Now, I personally would love to see some of those low-level, as you call them, D-level villains pop up. Like, you know, what's the guy?
Well, that's
the,
just
what's
it.
The
is
the,
we
what's
weren't
that
even
Russian guy with the three monkeys?
Red Ghost. Super Apes, yes.
Yeah, Red Ghost. I mean, like, I would really... Cause
I don't think they've got the budget for Red Ghost and the Super Apes, dude.
But it still would be
nor kinda, the Mad Thinker.
But see, I would really love to see some of those lesser-known characters really make an appearance. Like, kind of give them their one moment, you know, their 15 seconds in the spotlight.
I agree, because sometimes
would be Whirlwind would be kind of a cool.
Oh yeah,
but don't. My only fear is they're gonna do it like, well, if Whirlwind really existed, what would he look? No. You put the big goofy helmet on him and he spins around.
Mm-hmm. Which is one of the problems I had with Graviton is not only are they only using D-list villains at this point, but they're barely even using them.
Yeah,
and there's still no one that remotely resembles Graviton in the episode that it references Graviton.
True, but right, I don't know why I brought up Red Ghost. I just always thought it was cool, this Russian dude.
No, that's great, because it's still a classic monkeys. Yeah, it's still a classic villain, great visual. It's the sort of thing that doesn't work in the comics anymore, because comics have gotten so fantastic that it's not that interesting in that context. But in live action, that would be pretty fucking cool. The Hub, I was the best episode up to that point. I dug the inclusion of Jasper Sitwell, because they could do something with Jasper Sitwell where you only got little cheesy bullshit cameos with, even when Maria Hill is above the pay grade of this show, that's kind of disappointing.
Well, You're gonna have to tell me some of the Easter eggs, because
well, Jasper Sitwell, not only is that a character that existed in the comics, the S.H.I.E.L.D. comics, but he had appeared in one of the Marvel mini movies, the first one, if I recall correctly, because he was the guy who was helping to make arrangements for how to deal with the Abomination being included in the Avengers.
Okay, what the Abomination?
Yeah, because in the mini movie, what they set forth is that they were going to try to have Emil Blonsky be a member of the Avengers at the urging of Thunderbolt Ross.
He's the one in the freezer. I was just going to ask you that. Uh-huh. Because they mentioned the name Blotsky.
Yeah.
Do you want to spend time with him in the freezer, or in the cube, or the freezer, or something like that?
Yeah.
I was like, the same guy. The name.
And the freezer is the prison. Yeah. And the S.H.I.E.L.D. prison.
Yeah, S.H.I.E.L.D. prison. And the thing was, the name meant something, but I could not connect it to who it was. I'm glad you told me now.
So Jasper Sitwell, who's, you know, the Latino actor, Max... something or other, I can't remember his name. And by the way, he appeared in Walking Dead in the most recent episodes. He's in the episode in a pretty key role that is given even greater texture as the series progresses and you find out more about the character Jasper Sitwell. But I also like the dynamic between Fitz and Ward, where they go on a mission together and is trying to man up, and like Ward, he obviously doesn't have the skills, but he brings something to the party as well, and having them do their little male bonding. I thought this was definitely the strongest episode of the series up to this point. How do you feel?
No. Yeah. And that actually explains more of why Fitz is so fucking hard on for Ward at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll come to that.
Yeah. Though. But I really didn't. I just, because you told me, I saw the episode, but even when I was watching the further episodes and he's kind of like whining about it, it didn't really connect to me.
Why he was so defensive.
And that explains, this episode connects that bond that they created. That's why he couldn't see the trail.
Yeah. Because obviously he became like a role model for him. Yeah, he was trying to become more like Ward. Yeah. Big brother.
The epic adventure that began in Thor, the Dark World, continues in Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. All new next Tuesday, when the power of the gods,
whoever wielded the staff got superhuman strength,
falls into the hands of mere mortals. It sets the stage for Rage.
Something's wrong with Ward.
Tell me how to fix it.
Oh, this is the one with the berserker.
Oh, yeah. Well, hold on a second.
I'm a berserker.
So, the well.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the one. They'd already had some blowback on the show, I think, by this point. So, they were trying to make sure they had closer ties to the Marvel movies. So, they made a big point around the time that the... What was it? This was around the time the Thor sequel was coming out, right?
Yeah.
And so, they've got...
They hint at it.
Yeah, so you've got Sif...
Right there, that little part is like a little intro about, you know, the Asgardian gods and aliens.
Right. They had the big rant rampage in London in the Thor Dark World, and it's they're investigating and cleaning that up, which was a nice part, but it's only a minor element of the early part of the episode. And then they bring in this whole new thing where it's an Asgardian staff that gives you berserker rages, and Peter McNichol shows up, which, and I like Peter McNichol.
I like him, dude. He's,
and, you know, I mean, I like him in general, but here he's very much in the same mode as in Ghostbusters 2. He's just this irritant.
I was about to say that.
It's another instance where he's the mousy, weaselly guy who gets way over his head.
Actually, I enjoy it because to think of him as like a berserker going around killing people is small and...
Right, because
because he's like, you know, what happened to the berserker? When the berserker arrived on Earth, he fell in love with life, trees, and pussy. And it's like, you look at him and I'm like, dude, I would have laughed my ass off if he came running at me with a stick.
Right.
Like, I would not have felt
so. So the twist of the episode is that Peter McNichol was a berserker Asgardian warrior who has been living the life of an immortal here on Earth for, what, centuries?
Yeah. And like I said, because he fell in love with trees, water, and pussy.
Yeah. But most of the episode for me, it was just tedious. The only thing I did like was at the end when you have Ward and May having to deal with the staff and the urges that the berserker urges the staff gives you. That was okay, but I just really hated that episode for the most.
Coulson part where he keeps saying, just to let the listeners know, over and over people ask him, so where did you go? I spent a little time in Tahiti. It's a magical place.
Right. Yeah, I mean, as far as he appeared to have died, most S.H.I.E.L.D. agents assume that he's dead. Only if you have level 7 clearance are you even allowed to know that he's alive. And when they ask, you know, what happened to you? He was in Tahiti.
And it's a magical place. And the funny thing is, the first few times you send her, you're like, dude, this dude got some real hard on for fucking Tahiti. Like, I mean, that's kind of
I'm
strange.
Sure it is a magical place.
Dude, but he really has a hard on for it. And like I said, that's one of those things where I think the writers of the show kind of did this thing where they're like, what a twist. Like, you have one story arc, then you have two story, and then all of a sudden you have Coulson's story arc of what really happened to him.
We specialize in strange occurrences.
It's one thing to confront the unknown on the ground.
Wherever I go, things turn bad.
But at 30,000 feet,
I'm being haunted.
There's nowhere to run. The
plane's lost power. We're going down.
This one I thought was a weak episode.
Okay, so yeah, we were talking about the well. Now we're talking about repairs.
I won't lie. This one I glassed over.
Oh, this was the one where there's a... Yeah, the
red ghost.
There's some sort of poltergeist thing that's killing everybody around this one girl.
You could so do the red ghost. All you got to do is add three little monkeys. An orangutan. What is that? Orangutan, a chimpanzee, and...
I don't think that the red ghost was an actual ghost. I'm pretty sure he was a commie scientist, dude.
But he would invent...
He wasn't a poltergeist. Older guys shit. Who hung out with some random chick S.H.I.E.L.D. has to investigate.
But I'm saying, they have the capability to do a red ghost. Just put a parka on him. Give him a thick accent and he's balding with white hair.
I won't argue with that. I'm having trouble connecting one thing to the other thing.
What do you mean?
He's not an actual ghost. He doesn't have like poltergeist powers like what you see in the episode.
No, it is this guy, dude. He basically goes invisible and throws shit around. He's not a ghost either.
Yeah. And
Remember,
you're going to just spoil the key element of every fucking episode, aren't you?
Well, dude, he gets hit by a beam.
You hate allowing anybody to have surprises watching this show.
Well, I know some people ruined fucking Game of Thrones for me.
Dude, all I did was tell you
ruined
that Robert
it.
Baratheon was going to... I mean,
raped my child.
Oh, give me a fucking break.
Now let's go
break.
To a dark place for a fix it. So there was this guy, right, I hung out with, and I was really into the series of books, and I was wasting my life reading these books.
You were
and
a chapter before the king dies in the first fucking book.
I didn't know the king died. I was so rooting for Robert, and I'm talking about Robert, and this jackass starts talking about, oh, you mean his kid Robert? And I'm like, what? Yeah, you know, after he gets gorged by a pig. What? Yeah, that was like fucking four chapters before I got to it.
Oh, bitch. So anyway, repairs was a boring ass episode. It was another one of those monster of the week numbers.
Red Ghost.
Mr. Peterson, we need you to suit up.
A mission so dangerous.
Didn't S.H.I.E.L.D. be sending in backup?
They already did.
It requires a new agent.
You shouldn't be here.
Whose loyalty will be tested.
Let's finish this.
We need immediate satellite support.
Then number 10 is The Bridge.
This one I gotta see. I can't remember. They really have weird names for these episodes, too.
They're not very specific, no.
You think there's maybe that's like some kind of Easter egg to it? Like you string them all together and it's like the first fucking line of the...
Well, no, the well makes sense because that's where they revealed the abuse that Ward had suffered as a child from his brother.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Which that turns out to be even darker, man, when you start watching it. The later episodes, they're banging.
I'm still not remembering. Oh, okay.
I know that guy escaped.
tapes.
Oh, that's where Deathlok gets in, or that dude Michael gets introduced as an agent. That's right.
Okay, so Mike Peterson had been rescued by S.H.I.E.L.D. in the pilot, and then he returns, and he's an active S.H.I.E.L.D. agent trying to, you know, make up for his crimes committed as part of Centipede.
But did he really commit any crimes?
Yeah, he fucked some shit up that first episode. Oh, that was the other thing, too, that I was going to mention, is one thing I liked about the pilot was that they had Coulson's car, Lola, fly, which is straight out of the 60s comics. I did enjoy that. Unfortunately, they then dropped that element for most of the rest of the season.
No,
they dropped it from the car didn't fly again for quite a while, if I recall correctly.
The car,
and it wasn't exactly an expensive effect, or sure in hell didn't look like it. This is why we don't remember the bridge, because the entire episode is nothing but boring ass Mike Peterson shit. The funny thing was Mike Peterson,
I was annoyed with him. So I'm sitting there like, oh God, I hope he don't come back. And then he comes back and I'm like, oh, he's gonna ruin the show for me. And then he actually becomes more interested in the show as it goes along.
Yeah, well, if I remember correctly too, this was the mid-season cliffhanger. Like that. This is where they stopped the show. If I remember correctly, they had to stop the show because of the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
And so they had gotten to the point where they told all the stories they could tell before the Winter Soldier came out. So they leave you on a cliffhanger with Coulson getting captured by Raina, the girl in the flower dress, and Mike Peterson appearing to have died.
And of course, at this time...
And I know I'm the one who just talked a bunch of shit about spoilers, but it's going to be hard to avoid.
That just happened. Yeah. It's very rare.
This January, your favorite new fall TV show returns.
No single agent is that important.
Coulson is.
As danger hits all new height.
We've never done anything like this before.
This time, Simmons, embrace the change.
A team struggling for unity.
Stay away from that girl. Wherever she goes, death follows. We need to root out all the secrets.
You can never tell her.
And one man's shocking mystery is finally revealed.
You were killed. Now you're here. We want to know how.
Please, I'm begging you, let me die.
So episode 11, The Magical Place. This is where they finally start to explain...
Tahiti.
Yep.
And we get another appearance by Ron Glass.
Which one's Ron Glass?
The Doctor.
Oh, okay. Wasn't he Cosby's father-in-law?
No, he was on Firefly as Booker, and he was also on Barney Miller.
Dude, he was not... he was on Firefly, wasn't he?
Yes, dude, okay. He was Booker. Dude, really, you gonna come at me a Firefly? Oh my God, dude. If there's nothing that I've seen more time, is fucking Firefly, the entire series and the movie. That's like when I get sick, I watch that shit because it makes me feel better.
Okay, so The Magical Place is where they start getting really into the clairvoyant.
Oh yeah, and clairvoyant story,
which was a really cool, you know.
She's kind of hot. I don't know why.
Victoria Hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked that character. I thought she was pretty interesting.
That nutty librarian look about her.
Yeah.
You
know she's a lesbian, right?
Really?
The actress. So they recently revealed that she secretly married her partner like 16 months ago or some shit like that.
We have something in common. We both like comic books.
Okay. Yeah, I'm starting
to like this that one. Scene. That was a cool scene.
Yeah, this is the one where you find out that Centipede is very keen on finding out how Coulson was revived.
Yeah.
And they're willing to torture him to get the information. And he's somewhat willing to be tortured because he wants the information as well. And you get to see the coldness and the willingness to sacrifice agents that Victoria Hand has. So you can see that darker element is still a part of S.H.I.E.L.D.
What is the name of that actress that plays Victoria Hand?
I don't know her name. I'm sorry.
Dude, smoking hot. Oh, that was a cute scene where Sky pretends to be an agent. That's where he starts. There's Ron Glass.
Oh yeah, this is the one that show you the sequence where they're
putting his brain.
That was kind of intense.
Yeah, that was. I did not see that scene coming. When it happened, I was like, oh, that shit.
The part where he's begging to die.
That was probably the most telling part. Is he says, let me die. Please let me die. Please let me die. And it's like, ooh.
and this is also the one that reveals just how fucked Mike Peterson was.
Yeah, missing his leg and half his face. So I would say that was a pretty solid episode.
Yeah, that was when the show was really starting to find itself.
The world is full of evil and lies, and you can't hide from it. You can only face it.
We created a superstore.
How bad is this going to get?
Hold on tight.
As one agent grapples with reality.
They changed my memories. I have to say they didn't change more.
Another comes face to face with her past.
You can never tell her.
I've been keeping something from you.
It can't be worse than what I've imagined.
It is.
Now, you're going to have to tell me about Seeds. I was TiVoing the show or DVRing the show, and for some reason, this episode didn't record. So I've never seen it.
Oh, they find out that, so she thought her mother had abandoned her.
Skye's.
Skye's mom was, no, her mom was murdered. Yeah, I think this is where the word Skye comes clean. She actually comes clean that she had another motive to be part of S.H.I.E.L.D. And it turns out it's actually a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who was protecting her. A group of S.H.I.E.L.D. Oh, yeah. No. This one is a throwaway episode. Trust me, you didn't miss much.
Okay. But they found out
that Skye was left by an agent. Oh, right there at that moment when they're at the wall of valor, and she goes, Bucky Barnes. I'm like, oh, Captain America reference. But they find out that Skye was actually left by a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent at the orphanage. It wasn't her mom, and a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent was killed protecting her. And they interview a S.H.I.E.L.D. The guy they're going to catch right now, he was the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent's partner. And he talks about, I don't want to know anything about that kid. There was five of us. We found her. And all of a sudden, we started getting knocked off. So he felt, he went off the grid. And then, of course, these kids build some bombs. This is the part of the story that's kind of a throwaway. It's one of those episodes where one story arc
is interesting. The other one's just filling out the episode.
And that's what he tells her. And she's kind of having a breakdown. And she admits, I'm only here because I want to find out where my parents are. And every time I look, there's a redacted document from S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, and also wasn't the reason why she got involved with the Red Tide and going against S.H.I.E.L.D. was because she'd realized that S.H.I.E.L.D. had covered up and fucked around with her life.
Yeah, there's a document that states that. So that's why.
Okay.
We're going in undercover.
I hate undercover.
A covert mission.
Let me get that. Thanks, Dad.
Becomes a high-speed adventure.
Calls for the answer!
With a very special Marvel guest star and an astonishing, series-changing final act.
Oh, God. Hang on. Just hang on.
Now, Trax, I remember very well because that was the one with the Stan Lee cameo.
Oh, yeah.
And I really, this was my favorite episode up to this point.
Really?
Because I loved that the gimmick is that time is subjective in the episode, and that the various agents are seeing things from different perspectives because their perception of time has been altered. And I loved the trickiness, how that affected the narrative, because they're essentially telling you the same story over and over again in a Rashomon situation.
A la Groundhog Day, pretty much. Groundhog Day.
Let's go with Rashomon. It's a little highbrow. That's the one where there's a murder and everybody's got a different version of the story about how the murder took place. And you're trying to figure out who's right or finding a consensus.
Okay. How am I going to go there if I've never seen it?
Okay. Well, the point is, and I dug that you get to see each person's story and they build upon one another to tell you the whole story.
And of course, this is where Ward's getting a little jealous too.
Well, we've avoided mentioning it, but Ward obviously is interested in Skye, and yet he's sleeping with May. But his relationship with May supposedly is supposed to be relatively platonic. They're just getting their sexual frustration out on each other.
He's slipping her the D. That's how they say it in the hood now. It's okay, Frank. That's what them young kids say nowadays.
I'll look it up on Urban Dictionary later.
You slip her the D. They no longer say that uncomfortable sex word. Oh, yeah, that was kind of a cool little deathlock moment at the end when you get a close up look at his leg and see his death lock inside. I will give you that. Trax was probably one of the more interesting episodes.
Mm-hmm. Especially for one that didn't advance the greater story.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, this show is the opposite of X-Files. X-Files, the best episodes were the done in ones, and the worst episodes were the ones that were just
the giant alien story that
never got explained correctly, and they span it over multiple seasons. Ooh. I like the ones like where you've got killer cockroaches,
I like the electrical one what's his name? Jack Black.
Yeah, where this series, for the most part, the standalone episodes are garbage, and the only ones that are really good are where they're going into the bigger story.
One of their own, barely alive.
If there's something in here, a treatment that can save her, we need to find it.
But a mission to secure a cure.
This is S.H.I.E.L.D. There are always secrets.
Reveals an even deadlier mystery.
The whole place is rigged to blow.
Bill Paxton guest stars on the series that just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah, feels good, huh?
Oh, yeah, Skye gets shot. I forgot about that. And they put her in a capsule a la Steve
Rogers. So this is Tahiti, T-A-H-I-T-I, something like that, where they're going to have to find what brought Agent Coulson back to life, because Skye is very much in danger of dying. So if they can't save her the same way they saved him, she ain't going to make it.
Is that how you spell Tahiti?
Close enough. I don't know. It's Tahiti, but turned into an acronym, which is never explained, I don't think. But they were being cute. And so most of the episode is just wrestling with the moral implications implications of what they're going to do.
This guy might die.
And also because Coulson is aware that there's something off about himself, and he's aware that...
Bill Paxton makes his appearance in this.
Yeah, this is where Bill Paxton come in, playing John Garrett. Now, do you remember Garrett from the comics?
Vaguely.
He was the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that worked with Elektra and Elektra Assassin.
The blonde guy, right, though?
With the mustache.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay. And then this episode also introduces Trip, who is a descendant of Gabe Jones from Sergeant Fury's Howling Commandos. Unfortunately, in the movies, you don't have Sergeant Fury back in the 1940s. It's Captain America hanging out with the Howling Commandos. Yeah. But you still have Gabe Jones, and he's a descendant of him. And
I think that's cool.
In this episode, they don't do a lot with it. But they introduce that John Garrett was the mentor of Ward, who taught him everything he knows, and Trip has sort of replaced Ward as his protege.
Can we give away the big twist on this one?
No, not yet. But I did like that how John Garrett was played in this episode. He was a refreshing change from the boring cardboard
cool
characters
shit,
that had been appearing on the show up to that point. And this one was good about the lore too, because it was cool them traveling to find the way that Coulson was resurrected. They have to go into some heavy duty James Bondian type fortresses, and shit's blowing up, and major consequences around the corner. There's a very important reveal in this episode regarding the source of the raw material that allowed Coulson to survive.
I think we should say it was fantastic.
Okay, so what did you see?
A Kree warrior.
So what we saw was a
blue skinned,
bisected, blue skinned alien looking being that appeared to be of larger dimensions than a human.
I have read already. They said it's a Kree warrior.
It is a Kree warrior.
Now, is it a Kree warrior pre Captain Marvel?
It would appear to be. Yeah.
So are they saying that Krees have landed on the planet before? Kree
Is that
what they're hinting at?
The first time I saw him, I'm like, oh yeah, that guy's totally a Kree.
Oh yeah.
And then I was just waiting to see if they were going to fuck me over like they've done a lot of times on the show, where you think it's going to be something that's comic book related, and then it turns out to be some stupid shit that they invented. But no, it is Kree. It's established as Kree. They revealed that in the penultimate episode of the second season of the mid season break.
So what does GH stand for? Guess House?
I don't think that they've determined what GH stands for. I don't think it's mentioned. They just know that the serum, the markings on the serum that he took started out with the GH. I just dug it that on ABC television, you get to see the organs of a creature.
But you saw those tattoos on his side?
No, there's tattoos on him?
Yeah, watch.
Hold on, let's go back.
You're going to pause it in just a second. Watch.
You just say when.
Now.
Okay. Yeah, he's got glimmering, like vaguely visible, cross-hatched.
There's one on his forehead. There's two on his pecs.
Yeah.
And there's one on his ribs.
I just think it's really cool that ABC television has a blue-skinned alien with entrails floating in water.
Dr. Manhattan?
Well, no, just the fact that they show entrails.
See,
it's one thing when Walking Dead on AMC does that kind of thing. This is some gory-ass shit, basically. For ABC television at 7 o'clock at night, I think it's a little gory.
No. You want gory? It turns its head and looks at him. That's fucking gory. Like, it's still alive. That would have been awesome. Now, here's where we realize that Coulson's brain, he's mind-fucked. Like, he's telling about how, he's scared only. I mean, I guess, but he's seen aliens. Like, why is he more freaked out?
I think he's freaked out by two things. One is that, yes, it is in him, and that's what was used to resurrect him.
See that's
but
the stinger for the next one.
Okay, but two, and this might not be until the season finale, there's been other detrimental effects related to his resurrection.
Okay.
From the world of Thor come two warrior women.
I am Lady Sif of Asgard.
One on a quest to enslave mankind.
Men kneel before me.
The other determined to stop her.
Lorelai has Ward.
Agent Ward is no longer the man you knew. He will not hesitate to kill you.
Sorry about this.
Okay, episode 15, Yes Men. I'm starting to realize that network television needs to adopt the cable model of doing like 12 to 16 episodes per season, because this shit where it's 22 plus hour long episodes, it's just too much to keep up the quality of a show. You're just going to have a lot of filler crap. You can't help it.
Well, this one is horrible.
Yeah, this one's really bad. This is the one where some Asgardian person who I don't think is from the comics comes to Earth, and so Sif chases after her.
Pretty much.
And it's an hour of that. And some people like this one, I think, just because they liked Sif and they were getting off on her appearing in the episode.
Well, I mean, you get a low level Marvel character hero to come on.
Well, and they got Jasper Sitwell back again, which was nice. See, it just makes more sense to me for somebody like Sitwell to show up than Sif, because it's always a stretch when you've got Asgardians mixing it up with government types.
Yeah, but then they already established that the Asgardians are pretty much just aliens.
Yeah. Another thing that bugs me too is that a lot of this character's MO recalls the Enchantress, but she's nowhere anywhere near as cool as the Enchantress.
See, I thought that's who she was.
No, she's. I don't think so. I hope they wouldn't.
She kind of hesitates to give her name.
Well, see, that's the thing too. Is the Enchantress is one of the major Thor villains. You know, I mean, he has the big guys that he fights once in a blue moon, like Surtur. But Enchantress is one of those ones like Loki who just turns up over and over and over again. So I'd hate to see her wasted on a goddamn Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode.
Yeah, I guess that's where he's.
Yeah, that's another thing too. Is at this point we'll go ahead and mention that Sky was saved by the Tahiti formula, and Coulson is having some adverse effects from it, and he's concerned that Sky will as well, and she's not.
She's what? I'm telling you, she's a Skrull.
If you put Kree DNA into a Skrull, you think that would not have adverse effect? Would it make more sense if she herself were, say, a Kree, for instance?
That's a good point, but then, okay. But then that makes no sense, because then the monsters that were destroying the town
could also be Kree.
Maybe. I guess if they're blue.
Okay. I'm just gonna make this easy. They're Kree.
Her parents? Her parents?
Well, they
okay, mister. I've seen season 2 and you haven't yet.
Okay. Well, just you keep harping on it. Just it's all Kree related.
Okay. And another spoiler for Mr. Fix-It there. So I won't be watching season 2 now. Who gives a shit? It's ruined for me. Childhood ruined. Burned to ash.
A Marvel Maximum event.
We call him Deathlok.
Fear unleashed.
I want to know exactly what Deathlok is capable of.
Danger exposed.
There's someone else down there.
For the agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. trust.
What just happened?
Is destroyed.
You've been betrayed.
What the hell?
Put it down.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Uprising.
Okay, so episode 16, the end of the beginning. This was extremely important episode.
But this was the one that's linked to
this is the one that came out the week before the Winter Soldier.
I thought a week before or after.
No, the end of the beginning is the episode before the Winter Soldier, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, because this is the one where they're going after the clairvoyant.
Right, right.
And they find a dummy body and stuff.
No, just stop it. What? This is the one where they go after the clairvoyant, which helps to wrap up that particular storyline, which was one of the most interesting. Well, it helps to bring it closer to a resolution, the appearance of a resolution. And it was one of the key story arcs that was running through these episodes in the early part of the season. So it's one of the only things that we know of as being connected to a greater story arc.
No, but in this one, it actually just, they use it to kind of say, oh, well, this was one of those effects that we felt that, you know, Coulson might have, those paranoid, schizophrenic, crazy thoughts, because the deterioration of it.
And this is another one where Mike Peterson is in full-on Deathlok mode,
yeah,
where he's essentially a T-800 in the Marvel Universe, which was pretty cool, actually. Once you get to the point where he stops being this if they're a character and he just becomes like the unstoppable killing machine, that's exactly the sort of thing that you needed on the show. Also, unfortunately, a really great character actor is wasted on a very minor appearance in this episode, but I don't want to say who it is, and I don't want to go too deep into it.
Yeah, because I already ruined it.
No, I'm going to cut that part out.
I ruined it.
Nope, I'm going to cut it out.
I ruined it. If Frank ever releases the uncut episodes.
But I won't. But I did like that one because even though they don't reveal anything important yet, you get the sense of something major impending. And there are some pretty interesting twists and turns in that episode.
But
17 is the big one. Turn.
Only Marvel could create an event this incredible.
Don't trust anyone.
Everything you thought you knew about the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Please, show your hands!
Everyone you thought you could believe...
He is a good man!
He's a liar!
...will be tested.
I don't know what's happening. I wish I did. You have to believe me.
No, I don't.
In the most explosive, game-changing episode of the season.
This is a battle for S.H.I.E.L.D.'s soul, and we're on the front lines.
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Uprising.
Well, that last episode, actually, I kind of knew with that ending that wasn't the end. The way they set it up, especially Coulson, he gave it away. As I go on, he's, don't fear the Reaper. Get blown up.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to try to avoid spoiling the Winter Soldier, but at this point, it's going to be kind of impossible, I think. So we're kind of extra spoiler alert at this point, because this is where the entire series changes, and it hinges upon a major plot point in Captain America the Winter Soldier. So, I mean, and we're going to be talking about this throughout the rest of our discussion, so we might as well just get out of the way. This is where it's revealed a week after Cap comes out that Hydra has compromised S.H.I.E.L.D., has compromised S.H.I.E.L.D. for years, and nobody can trust anybody.
The beginning.
But, well, they don't tell you that in the episode. That's in the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically, you can't tell who would be friend and foe, and a lot of friends turn out to be foes. And it basically fixes a huge amount of problems with the show, because you find out that some of the most cardboard characters are actually Hydra agents, and have have been Hydra agents the entire time, and it completely changes the dynamic of the show. And just, you have an episode where, since S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't know who in S.H.I.E.L.D. is Hydra and vice, well, not necessarily vice versa, I guess Hydra agents know whether or not you're S.H.I.E.L.D. or Hydra.
Yeah, because there's that scene where
but S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't know who is Hydra and who isn't, so you get some pretty fucked up, shocking turnabouts in that episode. Love that episode.
They hint a lot of the secret bases are now under either S.H.I.E.L.D. control or Hydra control.
Right. It's all out war within the organization between S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra elements.
Yeah. So that gives you an idea how entrenched Hydra was in the S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah. where they're battling to get bases back because these bases have been taken over.
And again, Hydra knows who's Hydra. So they've got a huge advantage over S.H.I.E.L.D.
Because cut one head, two will grow. I love that scene too where he goes, cut one head. He goes, no, is it cut one hand? No, it's cut one limb. They're actually arguing over the mantra.
Right.
Hydra.
And I like how things all started to come together too because got Reyna really in there.
Gel. Yeah, it started to really gel right now. This is about the time when I was watching binge watching where I was like, I'm really into the show. I want to watch. Yeah.
And I forgot that Adrian Pazdar as Glenn Talbot was in the first season. Well, how did you feel about him?
You brought a prophet earlier. I was going to tell you that.
Yeah. But how did you like his turn as Major Talbot?
I thought he looked cool.
He was awesome. Yeah. Because he's perfectly douchey the way you need Talbot to be.
The cheesy little porn mustache helps too. Mm-hmm.
But he also brings that present. You not only do you have Major Talbot, who is an important part of Incredible Hulk story arcs for throughout the 70s and 60s, but also you have an actor with the gravitas to let you know that even if you don't know that this guy was a major force in Bruce Banner and the Hulk's life, that he is going to be a major character within this series. And I like the dynamic where he's basically hunting S.H.I.E.L.D. down for the U.S. government. So he's replaced the Hulk with S.H.I.E.L.D. and he's this adversarial presence. Great choice there. It's the sort of thing that you wouldn't guess was ever going to happen. And when it does happen, it makes you excited. It makes the show thrilling again.
Are you excited because of that or because of the word gravitas? Because you really like throwing that word around.
That's
the
good word.
That's the third time you've said that word.
When have I said that elsewhere?
You said it twice today. That's the second time. Listen to the podcast. You said it earlier.
I'll find out. Maybe I'll trim it down. I don't want to overuse it.
Because he's got a lot of...
I don't want to be like Mac telling me that I can't use trope anymore, for instance.
He gets a lot of gravitas right now.
Hydra's out there now, but at least our team's still intact.
Targeted by the world.
We need to vanish.
It's time to take their fight underground.
What is this place?
If everyone would follow me.
While the agent they trusted...
Kulth is a good man. Don't you owe a man like that something?
Shows what side he's really on.
Welcome to Hydra.
Yeah, this was a cool...
This is the one where they introduce Patton Oswalt, yes, as Koenig.
Yeah, and I really liked his character.
Yeah, he was a lot of fun. He was cute.
I wouldn't say that, but I mean, he was an enjoyable character too.
Well, he was amusing then. When I say cute, I mean that he was amusing. He was raw.
Gravitas.
No, he was raw comic relief. And on a show that can be overly self-serious sometimes, or just have badly handled comedy, having an actual comedian being funny on the show was refreshing.
The next episode, I thought he was fantastic. When they do the whole lie detector, that was great.
You wash up on a deserted island alone. Sitting on the sand is a box. What is in that box?
Machete.
A sat phone, so I can call someone to get me off that island.
How big is the box? Just say the first answer that comes into your mind. What's in that box?
Simmons.
That's a hard one. Let me think. The TARDIS.
An agency shattered.
S.H.I.E.L.D. no longer exists. The agency has been labeled a terrorist organization.
Now it's time to protect their own.
You two were close, Mary.
From a former love.
I won't put her in danger again. That's not fair to her.
To a lost soul.
You're good.
So are you.
Not always. I am not a good man, Sky.
Well, and all these are great too because you don't know where any of this stuff is going.
Yeah.
Everything that had been so staid and so obvious just right out the window this time. But it is bullshit that they reference Graviton again and then do nothing with it. But anyway, that was episode 18, Providence. Episode 19 is The Only Light in the Darkness.
No, is that a happy episode where the cellist?
Oh, okay. Yeah, Amy Acker, who was a Joss Whedon favorite from, what was it, Angel that she was on?
I don't know.
So anyway, so this is the cellist that was referenced in Avengers that Coulson had been in love with. And
so is this guy really a villain in the Marvel Universe that sucks energy out of everything? I couldn't.
Yeah. Yeah, but I can't remember which one he is.
I can't place his name. But just keep calling him Daniel. Yeah, that part was cool. Especially when he gets to Ward.
Yeah, so the lie detective sequence where you don't where
but he fucking clocked him and he pulls the gun out on Ward and he keeps asking him the same question and Ward's freaking out because this lie detector test that was built by Nick Fury can detect almost any lie. And Patton Oswalt's character first points the gun at him, asks the question. Ward answers it, cocks the gun this time, asks the same question. Of course, Ward figures a way to answer the question without being lying, without being caught. And of course, that's when
Telling the truth in an ambiguous enough way to where his ulterior motives aren't obvious.
The gravitas way or just a lie again?
Fuck off.
That's for you, Mac. Oh, hold on. Let me do it for Mac. Frank, you use the word gravitas too much in this show. What are you doing now?
I'm trying to find out what the villain was. He's definitely an established villain.
That sucks energy out of everything?
Yeah. He's definitely an established villain, if I remember correctly.
I just
can't remember which one it was.
My name is Mac, and I do no longer enjoy this show. Can we watch something else? Preferably something with automobiles.
Did Mac ever watch this show, or he just blow it off? Right? I think he blew it off after the pilot as well.
I want to watch something with cars, because I get a real hard on off of automobiles. You're not going to find it, dude. They never give the name of the character. Or you're just looking online to see if someone was able to name it.
They've got an episodes on here somewhere.
Oh, yeah, that's when they find out the character. Oh, so that's what he was watching.
Okay, he was Blackout. You remember Blackout?
Nope.
He was a Nova villain. But anyway, he used the Dark Force, which was also the same power source as that one girl from the Soviet Super Soldiers. Mm-hmm.
The one that had the dark black crystal, something like that?
Yeah.
We are FBI's most wanted.
Multiple contacts. Take cover.
On behalf of the United States Armed Forces, I order you to stand down.
Rogue agents with nothing left to lose.
Show me your hands now.
And nowhere left to hide.
How the hell did you find it?
I told them. There is no shield anymore.
Oh, this is the Hill episode.
Okay, so this is Nothing Personal. And this is the one that features Maria Hill extensively. Which I remember that part being okay. Because they actually got some use out of her. And they were able to use her to show just how devastating the revelations about shield was. And this is also the one where Ward is like full on fucking evil at this point.
Oh, yeah. And you really do feel for Sky.
Yeah. I don't really feel for Sky. I just like that Ward was so fucking evil. It's like
Sky,
he turned him into a great villain. I hated Sky still, though. I still don't like that character.
By this time, I feel bad for him.
Oh, yeah. This is the one that has Talbot, too. Yeah. I dug him so much. He was so cool in this one. It just was really coming together at this point. Everything was connecting well. It was intense. You didn't know where they were going to go. No character was necessarily safe. A lot of emotional turmoil in this episode as well.
The flying car.
Yeah, they actually got some use out of Lola. And I really dug how diminished...
Yeah. Well, that ending is very important right there. Because Coulson wanted to know who implemented... Who ran Tahiti
and finds out
it was him.
He was the one who's running Tahiti too. So yeah, a lot of dominoes were falling in this particular episode.
He's evil.
I don't believe that people are born evil.
Something happened.
Let me teach you how to be a man.
That turned this future agent.
I'm not that scared kid anymore.
Into a deadly threat.
Don't do it! I know that you care about us, Ward.
Only one episode remains.
I'm gonna finish what I started
until the astonishing season finale.
And I want my claim back.
And then we've got Ragtag, which we just watched in full. And that was a fun one, too. I liked that they were bringing everything together still, like making threads from earlier in the season make more sense as part of the greater scheme of things.
I think Fitz finally realized that Ward is evil.
Yeah. And you get the background on Ward and how he developed his relationship with John Garrett and with Hydra. It was all pretty well handled. I remember correctly, too, at this point, Marvel had started making promotional posters for the individual episodes, like movie posters, and this was one of the ones that had really cool artwork and kind of let you know that you were going to get some dirt. One of the better pieces of artwork they produced, I'm saying.
You ready to change the world?
I'm ready to kick some ass.
Shield fights back in the season finale you've been waiting for.
I have a weapon much better than a bomb that will destroy you.
The battle for their survival requires a special Marvel guest star.
Fury always said man can accomplish anything when he realizes he's a part of something bigger. Bring the house down.
And then finally, the last episode of season one, Beginning of the End. Episode 22.
Watch, I haven't seen it.
Okay, ask your question again.
Okay, so we have season one, you have season two. The next season will be season Agent Carter, the sixth
part.
Well,
no, what it is, at present they've run, well, by the time this would air, they will have run the first half of season two. Then for 8 weeks, Agent Carter will take S.H.I.E.L.D.'s place, and then S.H.I.E.L.D. comes back again to finish out the season.
Okay, so then is she's...
And also it's worth noting that that by the time it comes back and runs its episodes, it should run right into Avengers 2.
Okay, but is S.H.I.E.L.D. going to be part of all, like, Doctor Strange and the Inhumans and Guardians? I'm pretty sure it's going to be part of the next Cap, at least.
I'm sure that there will be elements of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I think that a lot of the S.H.I.E.L.D. question is going to be addressed in Avengers 2, because that's going to tell you what's happened. Well, for starters, let's talk about this episode.
Fantastic. Best
okay,
one of them.
So what happened in this episode?
So we found out that Fritz and the other British chick survived.
Yeah, they were betrayed by Ward, who was ordered to kill them, and he puts them in a situation where they would appear to be doomed. They managed to save themselves, but Fitz's fate is still up in the air.
Yeah, which I'm pretty sure you've seen already, but I haven't seen yet.
Right.
And then, of course, I think... Okay, so then, of course, the good guys triumph. Coulson and his crew take over. Deathlok is now released from his bond.
Well, I mean, we don't have to go into that level of detail. The main issue is that the Deathlok story gets resolved. There is a major appearance by a character from the Avengers universe, the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I want to spoil it for you.
Plays a key role. The matter of Garrett and... yes, plus Reyna continues her manipulations. So there's a lot of setup for season two at the end of the season one.
And I'm now thinking that Patton Oswalt's character is a clone, perhaps?
Well, I don't know if they've come right out and said it, but I believe he is a life model decoy.
Okay, that makes sense.
Especially because there's been promotional materials related to season two that shows him arguing with a third brother, a third Koenig brother.
Okay, yeah, so that would be cool. Finally, they brought those in. I mean, that was one of the
big theories was that that's why what Coulson was a life model decoy.
Really? I never heard that.
Yeah, for people who aren't familiar with S.H.I.E.L.D., life model decoys are basically robots that mimic humans fairly accurately.
Yeah, so Patton Oswalt has returned, and we're left with a little bit of a cliffhanger at the end. Coulson is not
which is picked up throughout the second season, yeah.
So, and that is Kree Lang.
It's related to the Kree, but I don't want to go into too much detail about that, because if you're going to watch the second season, then that's a pretty major part of the first half of the second season.
Because I'm pretty sure if they're going to do that, there's no way Guardians of the Galaxy is not linked to S.H.I.E.L.D. They got to link, because that's the Kree are going to have to make an appearance in Guardians. And I know James Gunn is like, well, I'm doing my own thing, and I'm not part of the Infinity War, and I'm like, yeah, dude, come on.
Well, here's the thing. You know who else is connected to the Kree? The Inhumans.
Well, that's true, yeah. That's they're the human version, right? Kree came down here to evolve humans.
Right.
Evolution, high evolution.
The Terrigen Mists and all that kind of good stuff. So it's all tied up into the Kree as well.
So, dude, they gotta do the Skrulls. I'll be so disappointed if they don't bring in the Skrulls.
Here's the thing that's frustrating to me. Everything has been Kree, and you keep bringing up the Skrull, and there's no guarantee that the Skrull is even a Marvel Studios property. What they have said repeatedly is Kree, Kree, Kree.
The thing is, the Kree, in terms of an alien race, are born. They're humanoids that are blue, and they have a class system. Bull. Like, who gives a shit? To me, the Skrulls have always been interesting, because they're shapeshifters. I mean, you just had that huge, invasion?
Secret Invasion.
Secret Invasion, which, you know, of course, sucked at the end, but had great, great potential. I mean, I remember just hearing about it, and I was thinking, wow, that's kind of a cool idea.
It was a much better concept than it was a miniseries.
Yeah. Again, like I've said over and over before, series like that, a simple 8-issue miniseries would have been fantastic. Don't fucking drag it through every fucking Marvel book for 3-4 months.
Well, no, here's the thing, though. I think that could have been good. I think that you could have tied it into all those Millennium, the DC crossover from the late 80s. The conceit was that every book had at least one character who was a Manhunter agent who was working against the interests of the DC heroes. Great idea. And occasionally, it was a nice surprise, but often it was very contrived who they picked and how they functioned. Well, the same thing goes with the Marvel books. You could have had some really cool Skrull reveals, and they teased some really interesting Skrull reveals, but for the most part, the people who turned out to be Skrulls were bullshit.
Yeah.
And there was almost no lasting impact, and what impact there was kind of dumb, and it was just nonsensical. Because isn't that where Norman Osborn took over Hammer, which replaced S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Well, and I have to admit, though, that was actually a very good Siege.
Yeah.
It was actually really good art. Like, now, it made no sense that the government would trust
Norman Osborn,
the known psychopath known as the Green Goblin. But when he
create his Thunderbolts. That was a really good read. I mean, it was a solid, enjoyable read, trade after trade after. I mean, I read pretty much the whole series, and the Thunderbolts was on point the whole time. Some of the Avengers stuff was okay, but it was nice seeing Norman kind of like lose it, like during certain aspects. Mm-hmm. But the whole, I think what killed it for me was the whole Spider-Man thing, the new Spider-Man suit with the red and the gold.
Yeah, that was ugly. I did like the Dark Avengers concept, but the only lasting effect of Secret Invasion in the number of years since that came out is that Mockingbird's still alive.
See, but I don't know. That's the only disappointing thing about Marvel's. Like you said, there's no lasting effect. There's no consequence to what they do.
I'm just laying back. Yeah. I'm tired.
Yeah, that's a major issue for me with Marvel is that no one stays dead. Nothing is ever permanent. I'm much more interested in the Marvel Cinematic Universe than I am in individual Marvel comics. I still don't read very many Marvel comics, but I'm enjoying the Cinematic Universe because stuff matters there.
Yeah.
And I hope it continues to matter.
Cool.
On Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Season 2 is much better than Season 1 because obviously there's a lot more going on, but a lot of the new characters like Trip stick around and are entertaining, and then they start introducing additional characters that are more interesting than the original cast, while many of the cast members either change or are pushed to the sidelines. That's an important thing to see for yourself.
Facebook friends Ryan Daly, Derek Williams Crow, Joe Crawford, Keith G. Baker, Michael Wagner, Ally Bats, The Bakes, Retreat Frantic Ones, Ange at... Do I say the N?
Yeah.
No, okay. And Between the Pages, Comic Reflections, Ed Moore, Jr., Enigo Montoya, Firestorm Fawn, The Gar Podcast with Glenn Walker and Ryan Cornwell, Jeffrey Brown, The Pod Couple, Siskoid, Talk Nerdy to Me, Keepers of the Favorite Flames, 100 Issue, A Bureau Tax Film, A.L. Old Helm, Adam Stabelli, Alphabet Flight Pod, Amsel Bun Canterbury, Backseat Directions, Bertha White, Baiko Django, Chris, Christina Fraser, Columbus Comics Corner, David Golding, D. Purvis, Dennis Harty, Dr. DC Podcast, Dwight L. McPherson, Gord Tolton, Irredeemable Shag, James Hudson, John D. Neo, Jorge de Arlanza, Jorge Salvador Jurado, you can tell that actually that's my language, Jose Cardenas, Just Dudes Being Guys, Longbox Crusade, Mike Rutliff, Nikki Rivera, Parley Pod, Patrick N. Dennis, Podcast Radios, Sean Merrick, Steve Seller, Terrence Caston Y, Tony Cispione, Warlock Thanos Podcast, Willie Yarbrough, Jord, Now It's the Martian Mighty Marvel Society, 20th Century Geek, the 108th Sec, Alligator Fuckhouse, Ali Bats, Avatar of the Green Bat, Buttcat, Bun Dragon Comics, Brody Kitchen Podcast, Bronze Age Babies, Caroline Wells, Cash Flags, Chris Sheehan, The Cinnabon Podcast, Coffee and Comics, Comic Book Vault, Comics in the Golden Age, It More, Fanhole Podcast, Good Times Great Movies, Grateful Dalek, Harry Allen the Flash, Eyes and the Face, Infinite Monkey Comics, Jake and Tom Conquer, Joe Crawford, Just in Time Podcast, Keith G. Baker, Lava Hog, Mike Rutliff, Motu Podcast, Odell Abner Dracula, Pass the FN Popcorn, I agree, Pietro Blacksimov, Rad Adventures, Randy Catwell, Richard Fields, Russell Rosenkild, Ryan Daly, Silver and Gold.
The Marvel Superheroes Podcast is in no way affiliated or endorsed by Marvel Entertainment. All characters mentioned and audio clips employed are believed covered under fair use, but remain copyright their respective copyright holders. But of course, the views expressed are wholly owned by the people who spoke them. No infringement is intended.
To the song of the Merry Marvel Marching Society. If you growl, if you groan, and your score is nearly zero, do not howl, do not moan, you can be a superhero marching right along to the fighting song of the Merry Marvel Marching Society. Stand a little straighter, walk a little prouder, be an innovator, laugh a little louder, grow forever greater, we can show you how to move.
goodbye.
So, yeah, you're done.
Okay, thank
I knew
you.
You were just going to do the pilot. Get out of here. We don't want you anymore.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
Get lost.
I'm watching The Best of the Best.
The what?
Oh, with Eric Roberts. Best of the Best, the martial arts one.
Oh, I thought she was kidding.
No,
she made me watch Rocky IV last week, and Mac was all like, yeah, that movie's great, and it's a fucking horrible movie. I hated that shit.
Rocky IV,
that's the one where they go to Russia, and he fights Dolph Lundgren.
You know that movie almost caused World War?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I saw a documentary about it, and Russia was livid about it, because they felt that because Drago could only be superior by artificial means.
Right.
Well, Rocky was all natural, picking on trees and stuff, and then in their view, they saw Rocky as a slap to their face.
It was. The world. It was very propagandistic.
So I remember I was watching something about it, and they talked about how, you know, it's one of the few movies that almost caused the war because Russia was so upset about it.
Well, especially at the end, it was so funny when and that's what we're supposed to be fighting together, not against each other. Yeah. And then you got like fucking Gorbachev kind of. So cheesy.
That was.
How about the song length montage to every other Rocky movie up to that point, including the one that we're currently watching?
About that movie is when Apollo Creed gets beaten to death.
That was a cool sequence. I like James Brown singing "Living in America" too.
And not just beat, but I mean destroyed by the Russian.
No, I like the one that he's driving
living in America.
Yeah.
Nation to nation. I mean, I remember watching that, and that was such an America moment.
Oh God, yeah.
I mean, it's so funny. So you watch that, and then Drago gets on there and just fucking destroys. And the funny thing was, when Apollo Creed goes on to fight, it's cartoony, almost like he's dancing. It seemed really strange that they do this big pageantry for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Stallone fights him, it's very just, we're gonna fight in your country, and I'm gonna lift wood and run through snow, and I'm naturally gonna build my body up to destroy you. And Drago's like fucking machine. He's like a fucking Terminator. And as they're battling, granted, this is all coming from memory. If I remember correctly, Drago's kicking his ass in the beginning, and then Rocky gets a couple of good cheap shots in, and all of a sudden Drago's rocked for these simple hits. He can't take Rocky down.
And then he's not a man.
It's very 80s. And I was just talking to a friend of mine. We were joking around how so many movies are dated. Like you can watch a certain film and it's trapped in
oh, it's frozen it's, in it's, amber, it's, yeah. Yeah,
in amber in that time. You can't. So when you try to watch it in a different time, if you watch it with a millennium baby, they will fucking not get it. And I make that mistake. Where I work, there's a lot of millennium babies. So I'll throw out like a Lethal Weapon reference or something, and they all I hear are crickets.
Yeah.
Because they're like,
well, I think it was on Huffington Post where somebody was doing a critical analysis of 16 Candles and its inherent racism and themes of date rape as socially acceptable, and it's like, wow, you guys didn't grow up through the 80s, did you? You know, it's just I can see it when I try to watch 16 Candles now. I see it, but I forgive it as an artifact of its time. But
dude, you gotta remember, I mean, that's what gets me is when people get offended by these movies from the past, and I'm like, you have to remember at the time that was acceptable. That's why I hate that there's so much censorship, especially against Mark Twain and the Huckleberry Finn series.
Oh, sure, yeah.
It's like, you have to understand.
At the time, it was a positive portrayal of blacks.
That's how they spoke. So if you try, well, my problem is when they try to whitewash it and take that out, you do damage to the artist's creation. Or like taking someone's child and saying, you know what, I don't like that eye color, let's clean it up. No, that's what makes them unique. That's what makes different. You can't touch that. And so I was reading where they were talking about how, you know, some classes don't want to teach them because of the language. I'm thinking, I can think of lots of movies that the jokes are really off color, very off color jokes. Mm. But at the time, you know, that was the mind frame of the country. So it's just so weird. Because like I said, I caught Rocky not too long ago. The first one.
Mm-hmm. The best one.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good movie. It's solid. Best one.
It's the one that won the award. It's the one that actually got Stallone taken seriously briefly before he decided he was just going to be a big old bohunk action hero.
Well, oh, that was one other thing. So I just watched The Expendables 3.
Oh, yesterday. Did you? I didn't make it past 2 personally.
Okay. So one, I don't remember one. 2 was a little decent because Van Damme being a villain was kind of cool.
Well, my father said, you've got to watch Expendables 2. It's twice as good as the first one. And I'm watching it and it's like, okay, the first one was totally disposable. I remember very little from the first Expendables. I just got off on all those actors being on the screen at the same time. Yeah. The novelty had worn off by the second one, and all of the guest stars in the second one were so poorly inserted into the narrative. It was just obvious, like, hey, Chuck Norris has these many days open. Let's plug him in here right quick and then send him back out again. Wretched movie. So three.
Three harkened back to the 80s. Like, whoever wrote it must have watched a plethora of 80s action films and said, okay, so this is going to be the story. And at one, I don't know if I should spoil it, but at one point, it almost doesn't make sense anymore. It goes from, okay, I get it, to, I don't understand it more. Basically, Stallone and the original Expendables free Wesley Snipes in this amazing train thing where it's still mind-boggling. It made no sense.
I do like the meta-text of them liberating him from imprisonment.
Yeah, and I love the joke. They all do the joke. What were you in prison for? Tax evasion.
Of course they did.
So the group does a mission. One of them gets wounded really bad, and Sylvester Stallone's character decides he's going to go after the guy. So what does he do? He breaks up the group of Expendables. They're expendable, and they've done all these missions, and he decides to pick up a new group of young kids to take on this expendable journey of battle. So you drop hardened warriors, because you're, I guess, attached to them, and you go pick up a bunch of kids who are basically just up-and-coming new action stars.
Yeah.
It was like their
Ronda Rousey's the only one that I could name, right?
Someone told me, they're like, oh, that guy does this guy does that. It was like their coming out party, basically. They all come out, and I'm like, it just made no sense. Then they get captured, so then the old-timers have to come in to free them, and I'm just like, wouldn't it have just made more sense just to take your original crew and done it? So it's stuff like that where they
so wait, create... did they go to the trouble of rescuing Snipes just so they could all exit stage left and then bring in the kids?
Yeah.
And then they could fail, and then the old guys can come right. Save the kids.
Yeah.
I'm sure there wasn't any ego stroking involved in that.
Oh, it was bad. And so you're sitting there, and thank God it's the last one, because I just don't think they could do a four. Like, that would just be punishment on mankind itself. It was horrible.
I still want them to do the female Expendables. I sat through the female Expendables that they've been talking about doing. I sat through the Asylum movie Mercenaries, which was Cheap Jack Asylum version of what a female Expendables would be. And it wasn't such a bad lineup. It was the girl who played the Terminatrix in Terminator 3. It was Zoe Bell, the stunt woman who was in Grindhouse. Vivica A. Fox, who was basically there because they couldn't get any more famous black action actresses. They couldn't pay Pam Grier, I guess, enough to jump around and do all that kind of silly shit. Who the fuck else was in that one? Well, when those are the top liners, you can see where there might be a problem. They got Cynthia Rothrock in there very briefly, but I don't remember her having an actual action sequence, which was a drag. Anyway, so I watched it, and it was just boring as shit. The main problem was it was just terribly, terribly dull and cheap looking. You know, it was just a handful of sets. It looks like they were trying to stage action sequences in an office space. Really bad. But if you could do like the real Expendables and get like Sigourney Weaver and Linda Hamilton and some of the newer ones like Mila Jovovich.
Don't want to see it.
I want to see it. Yeah, I think it would be cool. But the thing is Expendables is such a great idea with such a shitty execution that, you know, it'd probably be the same problem.
What you do is you do one Expendables, everybody kicks ass. You do the second one, and you start killing characters off left and right.
Yeah, actually, expend the Expendables for fuck's sake.
Because
that'd be cool. It'd be like Magnificent Seven, right? Where you get these guys together, and they just don't all make it out alive. They're still magnificent, but they're going to die. And then the guys who survive have to put together a new seven for the next movie. So expend some of these guys. These guys are literally expendable. Do one where you actually kill off Schwarzenegger and kill off Bruce Willis instead of having a contract dispute, and he doesn't want to take the money that you're offering to him, so he just doesn't show up again. Kill him.
Yeah.
Pay him the $4 million and then kill him. Huh?
So what happened to Bruce Willis?
Yeah, Bruce Willis wanted like $1 million a day to appear in the movie, and Stallone said fuck off, and that's why he's not in Expendables 3.
Bruce Willis must be like a dick.
My understanding is he is a super dick. When you out-dick Sylvester Stallone, that's quite an opposite of an accomplishment. Okay, way off topic.
You can work. You can sweat. You can train. You can dream and never be better than good. They can become the best of the best. Someone who knows. No. Someone.